From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
So after a long look, after a long investigation, after so many people have been so badly hurt, after not looking at the other side, where a lot of bad things happened, a lot of horrible things happened, a lot of very bad things happened for our country, it was just announced there was no collusion with Russia, the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. There was no collusion with Russia. There was no obstruction and none whatsoever. And it was a complete and total exoneration.
That was President Donald Trump this past weekend, reacting to the release of the so-called Mueller report.
It's a shame that our country had to go through this. To be honest, it's a shame that your president has had to go through this before I even got elected, it began.
The president also indicated that soon the screw may be turning.
And it began illegally. And hopefully somebody's going to look at the other side. This was an illegal takedown that failed. And hopefully somebody's going to be looking at the other side. So it's complete exoneration, no collusion, no obstruction. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Meanwhile, some have accused President Trump of attempting to influence the outcome of elections in Israel. This was the president at a joint press conference with Israel's besieged Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in Washington Monday.
In a moment, I will sign a presidential proclamation recognizing Israel's sovereign right over the Golan Heights. The state of Israel took control of the Golan Heights in 1967 to safeguard its security from external threats. Today, aggressive action by Iran and terrorist groups in southern Syria, including Hezbollah, continue to make the Golan Heights a potential launching ground for attacks against Israel. Very violent attacks. Any possible future peace agreement must account for Israel's need to defend itself from Syria, Iran, and other regional threats. We do not want to see another attack like the one suffered this morning north of Tel Aviv.
But while Israel won those two wars, we would have to wait nearly half a century until this moment here in this room to translate our military victory into a diplomatic victory. And that is why, Mr. President, your decision to recognize Israel's sovereignty on the Golan Heights is so historic. Your recognition is a twofold act of historic justice. Israel won the Golan Heights in a just war of self-defense, and the Jewish people's roots in the Golan go back thousands of years. And thank you for all you have done to make the alliance between America and Israel stronger and greater than ever. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you very much. Netanyahu's Likud party has been trailing the blue and white party of Benny Gantz, his opponent, in recent polls, particularly after an announcement last month of likely indictments against the sitting prime minister. Gantz is a former military chief of staff for Israel. In January, he too declared that Israel would never leave the Golan Heights, and he has taken an aggressive tone towards the rocket attacks that caused Netanyahu to return to Israel on Monday. This was Challenger Benny Gantz being interviewed by the Israeli channel I-24 at AIPAC on Monday.
Another rocket attack in central Tel Aviv. 7 people injured. This is the second rocket attack on Israel, on central Israel, in less than 10 days. If you were prime minister now, how would you respond to this?
First, I think he did good by going back to Israel. I think it's important. we should have a massive retaliation back. We must restore the deterrence that we had after Protective Edge. We cannot accept whatsoever any kind of attack from Gaza Strip, whether it's to the southern villages or whether it's to the central of Israel. We will have to retaliate firmly.
How would you do that? If you were prime minister now, would that retaliation involve a ground invasion?
That we should leave this to the operational echelons to discuss with the prime minister and currently under his...
But this is a role that you want to take, and you certainly have the military qualifications.
I'm saying...
So how would you handle it?
Definitely, but, you know, as a general and as a security guy, I will not tell my plans in front of the camera. What I would say that I will use all means, air, land, sea, whatever it takes, defensive or offensive. We are by far stronger than Hamas. Hamas knows it, and he will feel it now.
General, you, of course, have a lot of experience with Gaza and Hamas. You were the chief of staff during the last Gaza war, in charge of Operation Protective Edge. And some in Israel and elsewhere have criticized your leadership in that operation. They said that the operation took too long, over 50 days, 51 days, that it produced negligible results, that about 67 Israeli soldiers were killed. They claim that the IDF wasn't prepared for ground maneuvers. And some have also criticized your comments where you said you wanted to take the moral high ground and you sent in troops at the expense of their lives, potentially, in order to minimize Palestinian civilian casualties. Many in Israel took that to mean that you put a higher worth on the lives of Palestinian civilians than the lives of Israeli soldiers. How do you respond to that?
First, I disagree with the criticism. It's true that we are in a democratic country, and it's true that political persons come up with issues and increase them by far more than reality for political reasons. Protective Edge was a very complex operation. We need to deal with 32 zone of tunnels, which we did. We maneuvered in when the government decided to do so, and we went one by one and took care of everything. Militaries always take higher risk on themselves. That's the way military operates. I think we should keep the moral high ground. We will do it here today. I think we are as strong when we combine between military strength and moral standards that we need to keep. Don't get it wrong, and I'm sure that the Israeli knows it. When it comes running the dilemma between offensive operation and defending our country, will go for offensive operation, will take care of our civilians. No one was injured because of morality. It never happened. When people talk about this case, when Golani Brigade was inside near a hospital, we told them that we are taking care of the hospital. They have to be undercover. We made sure that this hospital is absolutely empty, and we wiped it out after we made sure it was empty. I think this is what Jewish soldiers and every soldier should do in the future.
General Gantz, we're here at AIPAC. AIPAC supports a two-state solution. What is your position on that?
My position is to make sure that Israel stays a Jewish state, a democratic state, and everything but a binational country.
What do you mean by that? Do you support a two-state solution?
No, we should promote any accord that can lead us to have a future, quiet, safe Israel for all its citizens for the Jewish people.
AIPAC supports a two-state solution. What is your position on that?
I support that we will not control other people. I support that we maintain Judaism as the main issue of Israel, Jewish democratic state, and we should make sure that it doesn't become...
Does that include the nation state law?
It includes that we are willing to discuss whatever can be discussed with any candid leader, just as I said in my speech. Any serious candid leader that want to solve this issue. What will be the very end outcome of it? It should be discussed at the end of the process and not...
Do you have a vision of what a Palestinian, an independent Palestinian state would look like, especially considering Israeli security?
I'm talking about the entity that we see now that can change itself into so many different ways. We don't want to run other people's life. We don't want to run their welfare. We don't want to run their infrastructure. We don't want to run their economy. We want to live safe in our country we will take care of the security and the perimeters, all our, the external perimeters. We will make sure that we have in our hands the security all over the area, because once we give this up, it will ruin down the Palestinian Authority and it will damage us. We have seen it before. So when we're looking at future arrangement, those things has to follow our security consideration, and this is what we will do.
U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo also went to AIPAC on Monday and made the following remarks.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you, everyone. It is truly wonderful to be here tonight. I want to thank AIPAC President Mort Fridman, Board Chair Leila Pincus, and your CEO, Howard Korr, for inviting me to be a speaker here tonight. And thanks to you for that incredibly warm welcome. As some of you may have seen, my wife Susan, who's here with me tonight, and I just returned from a trip to Israel. And we made a little news. You know, I've been to Israel many times, but it was the first time I had the privilege to visit our new embassy in the eternal capital of the Jewish people and the Jewish state in Jerusalem. Thank you. It was incredibly moving to be there. I also became the first American Secretary of State to visit the Western Wall, and the first high-ranking American official to do that with an Israeli Prime Minister. I then traveled to Beirut to speak with the Lebanese leadership about a big problem: the Iranian-backed threat of Hezbollah, the threat to Lebanon and to Israel, and we minced no words. And of course, it was a great honor to be on Israeli soil and to celebrate with Prime Minister Netanyahu at the very moment President Trump boldly recognized the Golan Heights for what it is, a part of Israel. As most of you would have seen by now, just a short while ago, President Trump, alongside Prime Minister Netanyahu, signed a decree affirming Israel's sovereignty over the Golan. What a truly great 2 days for two great nations. You know, that recognition ties in with my own personal connection to Israel, and more importantly, to America's connection with Israel. As a former West Point cadet and a former tank officer, I've had a chance. All right, for all you tank officers in the Army and the audience. I had a chance both while I was on active duty and while I was a student to study the great and historic tank battles that took place on those very heights. And it was really lucky for my family. On my first visit, I took them to the Golan Heights, and I had my son stand in each of the positions so we could feel exactly what it looked like to those soldiers on that day. My son reminds me it was muddy and wet, and his clothes were dirty, but he'll never forget the walkabout that we all took on the Golan Heights. You know, I mentioned this in my press conference that night with Prime Minister Netanyahu, that Susan, Nick, and I had a chance to gaze out of the Golan into the Valley of Tears, named for the vicious fighting that took place there in 1973. We saw what those brave Israeli soldiers would have seen. On the morning of October 9th, Commander Avigdor Kalani and the 7th Tank Brigade had been fighting for 3 days. They were totally exhausted. They were totally outnumbered. They didn't know what would happen next. Syrian tanks were indeed on the cusp of breaking through their lines. Yet they held on. Just when it looked like all was lost, a miracle took place. Tanks, reinforcements swooped in, and the Syrians retreated. As the dust settled, the voice of General Kalani crackled through the radio. You have saved the people of Israel. How can you not be completely awed by these brave men, their defense of the Golan Heights, and their commitment to the country? And how can we also not be proud here in America, proud to know that their relentless defense of Israel, of Zion, was aided by the United States of America? In Israel's hour of need, in support of these great battles, America launched Operation Nickel Glass. It provided Israel with tanks, with artillery, with munitions, and all the other supplies that were needed to continue the defense of the homeland. Israeli Prime Minister Golda Meir later said, "For generations, all will be told of the miracle of the immense planes from the United States bringing the material that brought life to our people." Without that battle at the Valley of Tears, and without the American support of Israel, there would not have been an Israel to recognize as the proper sovereign over the Golan Heights. And this relationship, from Truman to Trump, is a tradition of supporting Israel deeply. And I think about that every day as I serve as America's Secretary of State. But I want to talk to you tonight about something that I'm very worried about. Indeed, I am deeply worried about an old threat that is reemerging to Israel and Jews all around the world, the threat of anti-Semitism. It's a cancer metastasizing in the Middle East, in Europe, and indeed, sadly, here in the United States as well. In Britain, the Labour Party's tolerance of anti-Semitism in its ranks is a national disgrace. And France's Jews are under attack. The incidence of anti-Semitic attacks in Germany is also on the rise. Indeed, hate crimes against Jews in this country have risen by one-third since 2017. And we don't have to go far but to consider attacks on the Orthodox Jewish community in Crown Heights, Brooklyn over this past year. And none of us will ever forget the 11 Americans murdered while praying one Shabbat morning at the Tree of Life Synagogue. May their memories be a blessing to all of us. Every decent human being has the responsibility to fight anti-Semitism. It's an affront to religious liberty. It denies the rights of Jews to worship their God. It attacks what it means to be Jewish, ethnically and religiously. But Americans have a special responsibility to combat this scourge, because religious freedom sits at the core of our founding. It's in our Bill of Rights as the very first freedom. It's the essential freedom upon which all others that we enjoy here in America are built. And it's because I'm a champion of that religious freedom and because I'm an American that I'm here today to tell you the United States stands with the Jewish people and Israel in the fight against the world's oldest bigotry. This bigotry is taking on an insidious new form in the guise of anti-Zionism. It's infested college campuses in the form of the Boycott, Defest, and Sanction movement. It's discussed in our media. It's supported by certain members of Congress, I suspect none of whom are here tonight. Now, don't get me wrong. Criticizing Israel's policies is an acceptable thing to do in a democracy. It's what we do. But criticizing the very right to exist of Israel is not acceptable. Anti-Zionism denies the very legitimacy of the Israeli state. and of the Jewish people. Zionism reflects the determination of the Jews to live as free people in their ancestral homeland. It grows out of the Jewish faith. You know, Zionism was born in the Old Testament, crystallized under Theodor Herzl in the 19th century, and was realized in May of 1948, when David Ben-Gurion read aloud a Declaration of Independence proclaiming the establishment of the modern state of Israel. And yet today, only one country at the 192 nation, United Nations, has its right to exist routinely questioned. So friends, let me go on record. Anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism. The Trump administration opposes it unequivocally, and we will fight for it relentlessly. I want to talk about why anti-Semitism is on the rise. I have a few thoughts on the reasons. First, Western civilizations, and our youth in particular, are losing firsthand experience with the Holocaust and its survivors as the post-war generation dies out. I saw that clearly and thought about it on my most recent trip to Israel when I visited Yad Vashem. Second, professors teach our children that Israel is the epitome of imperialism. Third, journalists who help drive our public debate don't always take the time to consider facts or think critically. And I'm being polite. But frankly, worst of all, some politicians think anti-Semitism can actually win them votes. And we have to correct the record. We all have an obligation to do so. Because Israel should be admired, not attacked. Embraced, not vilified, and emulated, not ostracized. President Trump has made the fight against anti-Semitism a top priority. You can see it in our actions. In June, we left the fever swamp of the UN Human Rights Council, which since its creation has adopted more resolutions condemning Israel than all other nations combined. At the State Department, I reinvigorated the position of Special Envoy to Monitor and Combat Anti-Semitism, and we have a real fighter in that role, Ilan Carr, who I'm so proud to have on our team. Last year, it was my honor to host the first ever Religious Freedom Ministerial at the State Department. I'm proud to say we will do it again in July. On March 15th, just a few days past, I took action to deter the lawless International Criminal Court from targeting Americans and Israelis alike. And the Trump administration and my team at the State Department is confronting the world's number one proponent of anti-Semitism, the Islamic Republic of Iran. You've seen it, not just in promises the president made, in our actions. We pulled out of the incurably flawed Iran nuclear deal, which put more than $100 billion in the pockets of the Ayatollah and funded the Islamic Republic's violent quest for regional domination. In its place, we've enacted the strongest pressure campaign in history against Iran and its proxies, and they are feeling the pain. As I said a bit earlier, I was in Beirut less than 48 hours ago. There, Hassan Nasrallah, Hezbollah's terrorist in chief, recently begged for contributions from the very people in Lebanon that he and his Iranian masters have subjugated and terrorized. Hassan Nasrallah passing the tin cup is good news. Meanwhile, we're supporting Israel's right to defend itself with current 10-year military support to the tune of $38 billion a year, and more importantly, with the moral clarity that Israel deserves and demands. The The list is long. Just a few weeks ago, we deployed one of our most advanced anti-missile systems in Israel. And you've seen the work of Mr. Kushner and Mr. Greenblatt and our team hard at work in devising a proposal to help Israelis and Palestinians find a just and lasting peace. Importantly, too, my team is working to mobilize and rally nations all across the Middle East to find common ground. In February, our Polish friends partnered with the State Department for a conference in Warsaw. Over 60 foreign ministers attended, and Arab leaders from all around the world sat with Israel's leaders. It was truly historic. But uniquely, frankly, in spite of its historic nature, it didn't feel historic. It simply felt right. Jews, Muslims, Christians working together to defeat Islamist terrorists, defeat the vociferous anti-Semites in Iran, and protect each of our nations was the right thing to do for each of those countries. We live in dangerous times. We have to speak the truth. Anti-Semitism should and must be rejected by all decent people. Anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism, and any nation that espouses anti-Zionism, like Iran, must be confronted. We must defend the rightful homeland of the Jewish people. We must see to it that the old dreams of Moses, of Herzl, of America's poet laureate, Emma Lazarus, who wrote the verses inscribed on our Statue of Liberty, never fades. Indeed, we're reminded of the consequences if we fall silent. As I close, I want to return to my visit to Yad Vashem. At that memorial, those of you who have been there know, there is a list of people called the Righteous Among the Nations. These are non-Jews, non-Jews who risked their lives to save Jews during the Holocaust. 40 years ago this year, a man named Tibor Baranski was added to the list. Tibor repeatedly risked life and limb to save 3,000 Jews in Hungary during World War II. He later immigrated to America and became a citizen. He passed away this January at the age of 96. In the course of his heroic labors, a Nazi officer held a gun to Tibor's head and said the following: "Why do you, a Christian, help Jews?" Tibor answered, "You are either silly or an idiot. It is because I am Christian that I help the Jews." Know with confidence that the Trump administration will not grow weary of the fight. To abandon it would mean to abandon our principles. And as Secretary of State and as a Christian, I'm proud to lead American diplomacy to support Israel's right to defend itself. And I am proud to stand with the Jewish people and to champion the cause of religious liberty in Israel and in America. These are special times, amazing times, and I want to thank each of you, and may God bless each of you, Israel, and the United States of America. Thank you.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.